You're gonna die! You're gonna die! Oh yeah!
Could be a pro wrestler with that
girl. Oh, I love it.
That's how you kick off of that random show with some naked aggression.
Always naked with then? You, isn't it, Jack? Always naked with you.
Well, hello and good evening, and welcome to episode 17 of At Random. My name is Rick Timmis.
I'm John Wordsworth.
Jackson Matthews.
And on tonight's show, we're going to be discussing techno wars. So I'm going to try to be as brief as I can, just to put a little bit of background in here as to what we've been talking about. But obviously, there's a rising situation in the Middle East at the moment, with tensions between Iran and Syria, and obviously the Arab Spring and this, that and the other. And there's lots of information flowing around on the internet about this particular situation, with stealth bombs and radio controlled drones and all kinds of stuff. But it turns out that watching some news sources via Russia Today, and also a website which is infowars.com, there is quite a lot of movement of troops now amassing in and around Syria and around the Iran border, and deployments of forces into Israel, and troops on the Russian side and troops on the NATO side and the US side, and so on and so forth. And it's all got the signs of war and aggression and so on and so forth. And in this show, I thought it'd be useful for us to talk about that, and to look at that current situation, and to also talk about some of the information that's out there in the media. Possibly make a few notional predictions about what might be going to take place. And also, of course, because this is a tech podcast, so looking at some of the technology that's in play in this particular situation and seeing what's what. So,
sorry.
Nice one, Jack, I like it. Yeah.
I just thought I'd make a little adjustment to the title. I mean, because I heard you say Syria a couple of times, and I thought there must be something punny we can do with that. So I changed it there for people at home to Syria's business.
Yeah. I like that a lot. What do you think, John? Syria's business?
Will it stick?
I think it's a seriously cool name.
Maybe I'll just whack in an apostrophe, like Syria's business. There we go. And then it's grammatically correct, and it makes you chuckle. Sorry, Rick, that was quite distracting, and you were on a roll there.
No, well, don't worry about that, Jack. I'm always on a roll. It's getting me off a roll that's the problem, shutting me up. So anyway, so that's the background for the show, and I showed you guys a little bit of what was being talked about on InfoWars, and there's lots of information out there. And of course, some of the projects that I work on expose me to some of this information as well, because obviously I'm involved in stuff to do with the European Union and political information there. So obviously I see a lot of this coming over my desk, and that's what kind of struck me into that conversation. So, you know, so we're in this situation, and I think that we can accept certain realities. I mean, there's been quite a lot of information on the news about these almost, they're being passed off as mistakes or as explosions that are taking place in Iran and this, that and the other, and the pressure being put on Iran for the idea of it producing nuclear weapons. But there's also a lot of evidence to suggest that there are targets in Iran that are being picked off by these drones, these computer-controlled drones, where the pilots for them are sitting in some base in the States. I can imagine them like on an Xbox, to be honest with you. They're probably sitting there on an Xbox, aren't they? You know, flying this thing in and boom!
You see, you say that, but I'm trying to drag something back out of my sort of memory banks at the back here, the old and decaying ones. But I'm sure I read somewhere a while ago that quite a few of these drones will literally use like Xbox controllers. So where they've got little robots, less probably the ones where they actually fly through the air, but where they've got like a little scouting robot that will go ahead and go across the sand with a little camera, I think they really are using an Xbox controller. Plugged into a little PC or something. You know what I mean? I just thought that's really...
It's the right device for the job, though, isn't it?
Precisely.
Really?
Take it a step further. All these people playing Modern Warfare doodads or whatever, and they're all connected to the internet in a super realistic landscape. Maybe what if they're actually connected to these drones and they're doing their work for them? Wouldn't that be amazing? You could write a great story about that, couldn't you? And like Modern Warfare.
I'm sure people have, actually. There's sort of that film, The Gamer.
Yeah.
Man, that looks shonky, but
every time you kill a guy, You're killing someone for real when you don't even know it.
You imagine it would be like you know what we were saying just a couple of weeks ago about how the best iRacing players go off and actually get to race a car.
Yeah.
The best Call of Duty players will actually get called in to man these drones that are being sent to war.
well, we laugh about that, but there's so much of this stuff about. I mean, there's obviously there's this like all we always seem to be behind the times with technology, don't we? So, like for example. If you take the Blackbird, everybody knows the SR-71 Blackbird, or anybody who knows a little bit about aircraft do, this, that supersonic Mach 3.6 thing that was,
yeah,
you know, the big long thing. Black thing that it's a really lovely looking plane with a big long black body with like delta wings and two engines on it.
Right.
And for years that didn't exist. Like, and then in the 90s it turned up, or the late...
What do you mean, it officially didn't exist?
It officially didn't exist. So,
right.
Yeah, the same thing. You know, there's loads of things that
as
don't exist.
As far as we're concerned, yeah.
And so it didn't exist, and then it turned up at air shows and they started showing it off. Well, it was built and flew in service in 1971,
mm-hmm.
some 20-odd years before it was released. Well, now we're seeing, like we saw the B-52 stealth bombers that they've got now. I mean, during the first Iraq war, they didn't really exist. It was only that then people started photographing them on cameras and saying, have you seen these?
Yeah, yeah.
They existed. So now they're showing off the fact that, oh yeah, look, you've got some information here about...
Small unmanned ground vehicles. That little robot chap with the...
It looks like Johnny Five.
Yeah, yeah. But in his hand, you can clearly see a little Xbox controller. And then another one here.
Yeah, right, he has, yeah.
That's impressive.
Combat systems.
See, yeah.
Oh, no. I can see Steve Ballmer on stage now. What we need now is infantrymen. Never mind developers.
So Microsoft is the harbinger of war after all.
Oh, yeah, don't start me on that. No. Good old Billy Gates and his foundation. Yeah, we love a movie.
So obviously, you know, someone might have had a bit of fun with Photoshop, but I don't see why they wouldn't, you know?
No,
it's kind of like they could spend tens of thousands of pounds designing and creating their own system to control these little robots, or they can use the one that, 55 million people are used to using every day.
I do find it kind of curious that they've not rebranded it at all. You would have think they'd have like taken the same thing, given it a coat of paint, and then put like a Yankee flag on it or something. But as it is there, it's clearly recognisable as a Microsoft Xbox gamepad. Or maybe that's a way of making, I don't know, maybe like desensitising the people doing it. Like, it looks more fun. It's easier to, like, fire a rocket in somebody's face if they think, if they've got that familiarity in there.
I suspect for the greatest majority of people will look at that picture and go, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that there's a device on the... I mean, in this case, the device is a scout that's looking for bombs or whatever, but it could easily be a device that's got, you know, a 5,000 rounds per second minigun connected to it on two arms and poof, just let them have it, like, you know. But because it's got an Xbox controller, it suddenly becomes not death for the masses, but this is cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I also suspect that, like most sort of bodies that you think should be technology strong, I suspect that the military are also the same, and that they take the quickest route to the end result.
Mm.
You know, they'll be like, absolutely. Well, it works.
Yeah.
Could spend another 10 grand there. Putting a coat of paint on this Xbox controller and a little eagle, or I could go on holiday.
I guess it's more of a thing of affiliation that surprises me, like that they're that both parties would be happy to associate with the other. But I guess that's like I think it ties into it, like looking cool and familiar, because people watching are like more inclined to empathise with troops and support them, because like, hey, he's got an Xbox controller too. And oh yeah, no, even more terrible just occurred to me, the guy playing at home is like his drip feed of like Modern Warfare games. He's got that connection to the battlefield as well. I remember, what was it called? There was a game a few years ago that was all sponsored by the government that they were putting together, and it was supposed to be like super realistic combat, but there was like primarily the gist of it was like it was a propaganda tool. It was called Full Spectrum Warrior, I think. And it was...
You got that on Steam. I haven't played it yet, but...
It might even be that I'm thinking of. Maybe I've got the name wrong, but I thought it was Full Spectrum Warrior, yeah. And it was like designed by the government and the military, like with that purpose in mind. And I'm amazed they got away with it. But Modern Warfare, Battlefield, it's all the same kind of thing, really. It's all performing the same sort of functions to make you okay with the idea of war.
Hmm.
I think the very reason for their popularity has been all these TV images we've been seeing, like, of like looking down gun sights and like dust and rock flying everywhere. All those sorts of environments. There's not been many that take place in a, I'm going a bit like off kilter here, but like not many that take place in like jungle environments and things like that. It's always these, the same kind of places you keep seeing on the news. That's the zeitgeist at the moment.
Well, there are whole gamuts of threads on this kind of stuff. And if our listeners go and start off at Infowars.com or go to the Alex Jones channel on YouTube, start there and you can just follow that thread until you get bored of it, and that might take years, but whatever. But there is so much information about that. And it's interesting, that correlation you've just picked up, because there was a news story that they were reported on just recently about a whole sequence of black ops. So this was like special operations, special forces, that were running operations in LA, downtown LA. And what they were doing were taking Apache helicopter gunships with special forces troops, flying them through in and around in the buildings of LA, and then landing them in the parks, the special forces running around and doing this exercise and taking them off again, and so on and so forth. And the kind of conspiracy theorist angle of that suggests that that is that very thing that you were talking about getting the population into a mode of acceptance. And interestingly, I was only talking this morning when I was having breakfast with my wife about this particular topic. She was talking about something to do with the health service. But if you want to introduce a policy of doing something different, whatever it is, that change, first of all, you've got to change the mindset of the people, because people are resistive to change. So we're not in a war zone situation at the moment. So the idea of going to war is something that we're probably in a state of majority ignorance at the minute. So the correlation there between these games, like when you saw that game come out for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 and Battlefield, that were being launched at about the same time, and there were these two buddies that were running around and they were playing together as mates, which was the online role play section of it, and there was helicopters smashing through the Eiffel Tower and boom and this, that and the other. And of course that does in some ways kind of desensitize people to the awe of that, but also there's something very exciting about it, about wanting to be involved in that kind of thing and to feel like you have some kind of purpose in integrating in the game.
Yeah,
you say it's quite interesting though. I mean, perhaps one tiny counter argument, and I might be completely barking mad on this one, but
we need counter arguments, goddammit.
It just came to me, so I haven't really thought through yet. But what's quite interesting is there's been quite a batch of military games in the last couple of years. Whether that's just a natural ebb and flow, because, you know, like, all this is interesting talking, but at the same time, someone might have released one and it sold, because it all started off as World War II games, really.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, maybe it was just where the money was, and I think America quite like war as well. It's a very manly thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah!
So, and, you know, they're fun to play, so you can't complain. But what's quite interesting is in the last couple of years, I've noticed these games getting more and more realistic. But the one thing that wouldn't benefit the man, as it were, is the fact that you die a lot quicker now. So I've been playing both Battlefield 3 and Call of Duty 3, Modern Warfare 3. And I crank the difficulty one up from the normal, because I like to play games that are pretty hard. Man, I can't even get past, like, the third level on Battlefield 3. I'm usually pretty damn good at these games.
Yeah.
And I just got on one bit. Every time I poke my head around the corner, bang, dead. And I think that's quite interesting.
Don't poke your head around the corner.
But 3 years ago, I'd play these games, and you would be invulnerable. You'd just leap off of buildings, and you'd fire a rocket in the floor just so you could jump high.
Mm.
You know, but now it's gone so realistic, you think, fuck me, I'm glad I'm not at war, because I would be dead.
You need to wear... What you need is to either poke your iPhone around the corner on camera mode so you can have a look. Or you need one of those little Johnny Fives, don't you? Like we saw the little robot thing. So you whip that out of your backpack and get your Xbox controller out and then send Johnny Five around the corner. Toom, loads of bits of plastic. Right, okay, we won't go that way, lads.
That's right.
But as a propaganda device, it certainly put me off going to the military, you know.
Mind you, when you play in the game and you have that sort of a setup where you can get killed very easily. By the same token, I take it that, like, you can kill the other guys like quite easily as well.
It's usually much more realistic in these games were 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You place a bullet in them, They'll go down most of the time unless they've got a jacket on. So,
so when you finally crack that difficulty barrier, and you take out five guys in a row, like on that after 50th death, and then you shoot like five guys in a row, and then you've made it through. That must be incredibly satisfying. You feel like, hell yeah, I'm a badass. I just took down five guys, and I didn't take a scratch. Because if I had taken a scratch, I'd be dead, as you quite rightly point out. So it's that I'm just speculating here. It's that final rush that you get when you like, hey, I beat it. It's like, hey, this is fun. And then like you start getting better at it as you go, and you get a bit more tactical. Because as you say, they're getting more realistic and let you do things like take cover and hide behind things and like apply body armor, all that kind of gubbins. So I think it could still be quite effective. Like the realism of it contributes to the enjoyment for a lot of people, because they feel like they've really got to act like a low down dirty mercenary to really get the best out of the game. So they're all playing against each other, thinking they're all soldiers of fortune.
It's I think again quite off topic here, I think, but I do think it's money driven. I don't think there's any propaganda behind it. I'm going to be honest. I think
neither do I.
I think it's a
fun idea, but
conspiracy theories can go a bit too far. I think the game development company behind it, at the end of the day, just wants to make money.
Yeah.
And I don't think the government have. I think it's too big a machine to analyse. I think because it's going to desensitise people, but there'll be other side effects. You know. Especially when you play these games with all the rebels in, you think, well, actually, they'll start taking the rebel side in some of them, and all sorts of weird stuff happens, you know?
Yeah, half of these guys can't coordinate their wife and kids. They're not going to be able to manage like a conspiracy on this scale. I think, if anything, the games are popular because of the images in the media, and they're popular, and they sell a lot, because that one sells a lot, they make another, and that sells a lot.
And I think it is worrying that it does desensitise people, but at the same time, I think they also learn a lot of valuable skills out of it.
Hmm.
So I think it's six of one, half a dozen the other. Yeah, and this is what people never focus on. But like when you play Battlefield 3, you're always playing it in a 16-man team. And every time you work together, you win.
Hmm.
And if you just run off, okay, you get your 16-year-old kid who's played it for 700 hours, and they can pretty much do what they like.
See, we need guys like him in the army. 16-year-old kids with too much time on their hands. Go on, get out there. You'll win this war for us.
But I don't know. I think in my head, a lot of conspiracy theory type things fall apart when you realise the chance of them being that organised when they can barely wipe their own ass.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I think there's definitely that aspect to it. I think that that's probably a conversation perhaps for another show, the idea of conspiracy stuff, because there's a lot of conspiracy notional ideas around globalist theories, the Illuminati and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff.
That'd be a great show, we'll totally do that.
Yeah, we should, that'd be really cool. But on this particular one here, I want to try to track us back to the reality of it, because we can see straight away that gaming technology and simulation technology being used in real conflicts, like the drones that are flying in and so on and so forth. But the other point I want to chuck out there as well is an idea for us to just discuss as well, and that is that we know at the moment from the research that we did, and I showed you earlier on, that there is that Iran has now sort of said that basically it's going to take action against people if they keep blowing things up. Mm. Even though they say they're not doing it, they do know that they are. And so Iran's now saying that it's actively going to start doing something about war, and then we've got the American troops are mashing on one side and this, that and the other. So the question I have is this, is that it's a fair estimate. If you're going to speak to anybody in Iran, or speak to anybody, you know, in the streets here in the UK or in the US, and say to them, do you think we should take military action and go into a military conflict with Iran? Most people probably don't really have a view, aren't really connected to it. But if you really push them, they'd probably say, no, I don't think we should really go to war. And the point that I'm making here is that war is the kind of action that's taken by the leaders of the countries who decide for political or economic reasons that they're effectively going to put several tens, hundreds or hundreds of thousands of people to death by sending them out into this conflict. I just wonder whether they can once again pull that off. I mean, a fairly large-scale conflict of the thing that's possibly coming together now in the Middle East is a sizable war. I mean, it's probably bigger than anything we've seen for a significant period of time. Can those people actually pull that off now that we're so interconnected with social networks and this, that, and the other? I mean, if you look at, we're going to be talking on another show about SOPA and PIPA and about how the population on the ground through social media networks and the internet said, no, we're not having this. Mm. You've got the big Occupy movements, which are now about the banks and about globalization. You know, can they actually get a real conflict off the ground and escalate and a real war, going off the ground? Will people still stand by and continue watching the TV and allow that to happen? Or will there be a public protest or an internet outcry or whatever? What are your thoughts, guys?
My thoughts aren't too cheerful, to be honest, as to whether you could galvanise people against it. It's mainly because I'm thinking a war like that is usually preceded by a lot of misinformation. If you can get enough people to think, oh yeah, there's a cause for war, you can never convince people there's a cause to take away their favourite website. You know, it's like when people will like sign 50,000 names to a petition because you cancelled Ghostbusters, the TV series, or something. And that will be much more likely to garner like support. And all you have to do is like whack a few keys on a keyboard, and suddenly you've cancelled the internet. I mean, you could, because they were like Wikipedia blocks its website, and everybody like takes notice. It's an easy way to respond. Now, I suppose you could respond the same way to something like to a potential war. You could like shut down your site in protest. But I think people like went with blacking out their websites because they were saying this is what it's going to be like if they shut down the internet. You know what I mean? I think a response to a war, unless it's demonstrably unjust, would be hard to unify people in the same way, because like half of them are going to say, well, they have got all those nuclear weapons that we haven't found yet, but I'm sure we will. and so we've got to have to do something. There'll be enough people that are scared and they'll be divided. If the powers that be wanting this to happen are sufficiently organised, and they're not always. But yeah, and the other half are going to be saying, oh yeah, come on, this is all about spreading the influence of power and oil and all that stuff. But by and large, I think if people were like divided and confused enough, which if these guys are doing their job properly, they will be. There'll be enough misinformation, like you'll be hearing that this guy is like eating children and firing guns into the sky, all kinds of stuff, and stuff you hadn't heard of before, strangely. But I just think the chances of people being unified and we're having the same point of view enough, are the chances of it are less than if you threaten to take away their internet or censor their internet, you know, because that's easy to understand. It's always bad. There's no two ways about it. If you stop me putting my fan art up, that's terrible. And there's just so much more clear cut, whereas much easier to muddy the pool when you're talking about something like a potential war or a guy that needs to be stopped because he's dangerous.
Yeah, I've got 3 points actually, which are related to your question, which I'll raise one at a time, and then we can chat about them. But I think the first one, which is kind of building on what Jack says, is if there were some sort of equation to model the internet uproar caused by some sort of event or plan of event, then I think the factor where does it affect my daily life overcomes most other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the most predominant factors in that would be if it affects your day-to-day life, then there'll be an uproar. And I think the idea of there being a war in another country is actually quite low on that scale, regardless of what the outcome is, which I think is also, you know, obviously it should be more important, but it isn't.
Mm.
So the fact that, you know, the fact you could even, in theory, America would wipe a country out, I think that would cause less uproar than getting rid of Wikipedia. Within the American public, you know. But that's because it affects their daily life, whereas if Iran was gone, it wouldn't.
Yeah.
And that sounds good. Yeah. But not that if you ask them in the street, which is worse, they'd obviously tell you bombing the hell out of a country is worse.
Yeah.
That's what they'd tell you if you asked them. But if you ask them, asking them.
If you ask them, what are you prepared to do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, what can I do?
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas what they can do when it's Wikipedia is they can put their name on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And they can do that for the other thing. But...
And it would probably be very effective. If everybody said, no, we're blacking out a website, but are they prepared to do that?
Mm.
Probably not.
But I think that's that's another part of the same equation, is how much of a difference do they think they can make? And I think when it comes to the internet has shown that if you get enough support backing you, the internet powers that be will tend to listen and affect their decisions based on what people are saying on Twitter. But that hasn't yet mapped off to the real world that much.
Mm.
So when the decision is one that will affect people online, then generally if you go online and make a hoo-ha about it, it will influence the outcome. Whereas with something like war, if every single person in the country tweeted, it wouldn't necessarily stop that guy from pushing the button.
Mm.
And people know that. People have this kind of, what's the point in doing this? You know, it's not going to change anything. Whereas when it comes to internet affairs, they can.
It's that disconnect, isn't it, that you're talking about, because it doesn't affect you directly. Mm. I mean, I guess if an intercontinental conventional missile comes out the sky and into Coventry or something like that, you know, and you live in Coventry, all of a sudden it becomes much more of an issue. But until that happens, you're not largely bothered. Whereas if somebody takes your Facebook page down, you're going to go out and start shooting people, aren't you?
That's right.
Well, yeah, that's really important. You know, I mean, it wouldn't even need to be in your city. I think if a bomb landed in the UK, that's the point at which people in the UK would start to pay attention.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's too late at that point. Wars.
Yes, that's right.
If you've got a bomb on your doorstep, it's too late to read on Twitter and say, I'm not so sure about this war anymore. Please don't fight each other. but I guess that's also very human nature, isn't it? To be reactionary instead of proactive.
Yeah.
You know, wait till the shit has hit the fan and then you think, actually, I don't like this.
Yeah, this is no good, because up until yesterday it wasn't causing me a problem, you know? And I mean, I suppose that's to be expected. It's like, it's kind of natural. But with more foresight and a bit more... I mean, I suppose there's personal risk involved, isn't there, if you start, like, lending yourself to causes without knowing for sure whether you need to, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I suppose, yeah, it's only normal, like, instinct to rein that in and say, okay, now until the bombs fall, then I'm going to look after my circle.
I asked that question earlier on when we were talking pre-show, as we were kind of thinking this through, and it's probably a good time to reiterate that, which is, I'm saying it's a good time to reiterate it, and I've suddenly lost my thread. That's really good, isn't it? Forget it, let's skip it from that.
It'll be back.
It'll come back.
So the other two points I've scribbled down on my iPad, I think they're actually quite related, so I'll bring them both up and then discuss them as one. But so there's a problem with the information that we get as well about how much it might affect your daily life. And the problem is there's been an awful lot over the last, maybe say, 2 years of news coverage of all these wars and fights, etc.
Mm.
And not one of them has ever really made me feel like it's going to affect me.
Yeah.
And the amount of times that you hear about people dying, I'd say that, I mean, there's an interesting statistic that apparently in the last 12 months, 571 UK troops died in a war, but 1,400 people died on the roads. 1,400 cyclists died on the road.
Mm.
So instantly you start thinking, well, actually, the bigger problem is the cyclists on the road. But they don't go into the fact that though for 570 British people that died, maybe 55,000 Iranians died, or because we bombed them.
Yeah,
you know, but they're not our people. So.
yeah, pretty much. It's just sensationalism, isn't it?
So the news, sort of feels like they have to constantly cover this thing, but they never have much to say. So it becomes very droll and like, oh, more stuff about the war, quote unquote. Yeah. No one's even dying.
Yeah.
It's not a war. Well, actually, you know, we're just not getting fed the right information. So. Yeah.
That's the very thread that I was going to talk about, which was the information, and it suddenly vanished. And maybe it vanished because it was your point.
I took it from your mind.
Yeah, you did. John's got mind powers now. I'm getting scared. Have you got an Xbox controller? I can't see a USB plugged in my back. The point being that there's a lot of... What I found interesting is that the mainstream media that we see. So what you see happening in the mainstream news, like on the BBC or Channel 4 or whatever on our terrestrial TV that we watch here, we get one set of information. But when you go and dig around on the internet, you get another set of information. You can see what's going on. So, for example, I opened up today about the idea of this, you know, the Soviet troops are massing down into Georgia and deploying tanks in Turkey and so on and so forth. Well, none of that's being reported on the mainstream media. Although on the internet, they're also reporting that the mainstream media are all renting rooftops and their advanced teams, the advanced media teams and camera people are all moving in to Israel and this, yeah, and the other. So something's going to go off. So you know, is that that information is important because what the majority of us are exposed to is a kind of... is maybe not the full picture. And so we're more detached from it. And when I talked pre-show about this, I said, you know, one of the things that I was a little nervous about doing this show was the fact that there is an aspect of prediction here, or an aspect of doom and gloom, or possibly conspiracy theory, because essentially what we're saying at the opening of this show is that it looks like war is imminent in Iran and Syria, and that you know, all of these troops are going out there, and we've got this, that and the other, and we've got the, you know, I mean, the National Guard from America is going to be deployed in Jordan in March and so on and so forth. So we know that this is happening from the various sources that we pick up, and yet we're not necessarily getting that information. So when you go out there, and we'll have a look in the moment on the social media and see whether we got a response to that tweet that I put out there, you sound like some kind of crank, don't you? You know, yeah, some kind of lunatic, you know. But that's because the population is exposed to the mainstream media and they see it largely in a detached form. But then if you're looking broader and researching and spending some time, the pieces of the puzzle are there, which I think substantiates what you're talking about, John.
Yeah, I think what's actually interesting about the internet, though, is it's almost the opposite end of the scale. I don't want to say there's too much information, but there's two problems with the information you get off the internet regarding these sort of events. One of them is that they're nearly, I'd say 95% of the time, the person who's given you the information has done it to prove some sort of opinionated point.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try and pull out which bit of this is actual, natural, raw information.
Yeah.
And which bit have they gone... and I guess this is kind of symptomatic of having too much information, is that when you've got hundreds and hundreds of videos and pictures of everything, you can pretty much make up any story you like from a collection of those.
Yeah.
So you might see a 30-second clip of the BBC news team coming into the top of a building on Jordan, but then there might be another 7 hours of other stuff that completely debunks the same information.
Yeah.
And they just snip that out because that's irrelevant to the point they're trying to make.
That's it, yeah.
So the problem is you're always seeing it through someone's lens.
There's so many eyes, aren't there, that you're seeing it through on the internet. I mean, all these different people have, like, from a unique perspective, from like their own point on the planet, and they all heard this from somewhere. And if they got 50 sources, doesn't necessarily make it any more credible. I mean, there's even the rumours. I mean, you don't see this anywhere near as much as if you do speculation on technology. What's the next games console going to look like? Oh, it's going to have 50 USB ports, and the new Apple iPad is going to be able to fly and stuff like that. It probably will be able to fly. That's beside the point. The thing is that, like, those rumours sound plausible enough, and they get said 50 times, because of course they do, because everybody copies their news from each other. I heard it here, post it in my blog. It's just a rumour, don't worry, they say, just to, like, qualify it. But then, by the time it's been said 50, 100 times, hey, it's got to be plausible, why not, right? And then, at the end of it all, Steve Jobs, God rest him, will pop up and say, no. That was never going to happen. I don't know where you got that from.
Or we did it because everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. Yeah, they might go that way. But like, just because information comes up a lot and seems credible on the internet because it's been repeated a lot of times, you can easily see how like a false rumor can build a lot of steam with all these people who are essentially just repeating what each other have said.
I got like Chinese whispers. A great example though of this taking the relevant bits of information to make your news story. I try and remember, I was told it about a month ago, but I drank quite a lot of wine before then. So locally at the student union at Exeter University, they had a speaker in, and he talked about some stuff. But the big thing that came away from the meeting was everyone said, oh, you shouldn't have let him on because blah, 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 blah. And he said the Nazis were right. And indeed, he did say that. As part of a massive sentence, which was something like, and when it came down to the financial situation of this one place in this scenario, then the approach that the Nazis proposed, you can see that they were right. And you're like, well, on that one thing they were. And then obviously everyone just took that tiny fragment of the sentence away, and that was the news story.
Because
the
magic
whole
word Nazi
country ran.
Maybe you meant to say the Nazis were the extreme right.
But it was, yeah, it's even, it's like, and the Nazis were right for this single instance where they're,
yeah,
where they were talking about money in a bank or something. You know what I mean? Like, it was completely irrelevant to the,
yeah, exactly. I mean, for them to have been such a, like, a dangerous opponent, they had to have been right about a few things. I mean, if they were wrong about everything, then they'd just be blundering about, falling over wheelbarrows, wouldn't they?
But I mean, it's just the way that, it's the way they've picked the words out of the sentence.
Yeah.
The sentence meant something completely different. They've picked out four words and they've twisted that to be a news story. But that's exactly what's going to be happening with all the news we see on the internet.
Yeah.
For
both sides.
You never know who's doing that to their own advantage.
Yeah.
But do you have a counter for that? Because one of the things that I try to do, for example, if I'm spending a lot of time looking at YouTube, or if I'm watching Alex Jones, for example, he's talking about lots of stuff and he's, oh yeah, how can I get those Decepticon medium prostitutes? And he's giving it all this on his show, which makes me giggle. I mean, obviously he's talking about serious subjects, and I don't watch that for light entertainment because that'd be sick, man. But what I do tend to do is I tend to listen to the points that he's making and then use the power of the internet to try to corroborate that.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
When he talked today and said, look, you know, okay, well, there are troops, American troops being deployed in Syria. Well, first thing I do is go and shove that into Google and see whether I can find the reports. Are there, you know, legit reports of American troops being deployed in Syria? Are there legit reports of Russian troops moving down into the Middle East? And sure enough, you can find those articles. And I think that's probably the key, isn't it? Is not to take one thread from the internet. Mm. You've got such a lot of information that you need to corroborate probably several times against several different news sources and stories, and then try to distill from that some semblance of truth. And then when you've done that, you can make up anything you like.
That's right.
You can pick out the one sentence you found in someone's report and use that to make your own opinion. But I think the other, I think the one last topic that I had to raise was just that I think war is very different now to what it was years and years and years ago. And obviously, our grandparents, say, will have an image of war being rations, not leaving the house and air sirens.
Mm.
Whereas we have an image of war, few news stories about something happening in Iran.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we've whacked the word war on it, but
yeah.
War in Iran, but
it wasn't that long ago. It would have been.
Wasn't really a war for us guys. You know what I mean? Like, it had no effect on our lives.
I mean, a few years ago, we would have like thought of war as this supremely terrifying thing because, like, we had like, because, well, we still got the big bomb and everything, and it's like, oh, war means, oh yeah, that's it. It'll be the last war you ever see, mate. But these days, it's like, oh yeah, war, it's all right, their problem. It's felt like countries with like deserts and stuff, nothing to do with us.
Well, we could do a whole show on that, and anyway, we could start that. Just Google the word tactical nuke.
Yeah, that's right.
Go and Google that and yeah, find out that information. But that's a completely whole story about that kind of thing. But you are right. But wars are fought in a different way. And coming back to this technology, to the Xbox and the robots and the this, that and the other. And I mean, at the moment, we've got the drones, which we are accustomed to, and, you know, people flying. Well, they came out a few years ago when they were saying these are reconnaissance drones, and we had this idea of these little model planes that flew around with a camera on them. What they didn't tell us was these things are jet planes that can carry bombs underneath them, and now they're carrying bombs underneath them. So that's the technology that we see. I want to talk about a little video that I saw in a moment, but just a little funny aside, thinking about the games that we play and where, of course, we are communicating with the server over the internet. So one of the things I experience in iRacing, for example, is I'll be racing around the track and suddenly the guy in front of me will disappear. It's gone. And then he'll reappear further up the track, or he might reappear on me. Bang! And there's a big crash. And I'm just wondering whether, let's say you're in Fort Lauderdale or whatever, you're sitting there with your Xbox controller watching the screen, and you get packet lag, does that mean that all of a sudden what you thought was a military implementation on the outskirts of Tehran is actually McDonald's in the centre of Tehran, and by the time you press the button, packet lag means that the drone flies over and shoves a device straight through Ronald.
To be fair, better target if you ask me.
Yeah, well, you want to supersize that? Oh, yeah! But talking about technologies, now, I've not been able to corroborate this video and I've not wasted any time on it at all, but there was a video that was shooting around on YouTube that shows, in Afghanistan, some tanks coming down the road and one of the tanks gets hit by a landmine and goes off underneath its tracks. Big bang, no damage done, really. I mean, I think the guys in the tanks just thought they'd hit a bump, but it was a big bang. The tank stopped at the side of the road, spun round like this with its gun turret, having a look around to see if it could see anything, and then drove off a little bit, and another tank came down. And then this tank stopped at the side of the road, and a bloke got out. And then, I kid you not, it's unbelievable, there is this... basically somebody puts a red circle on the screen and says watch this circle, and as it's coming along you get this like sort of shimmering in the image, and there's like a wall and there's a load of grassland between the camera and the wall, and this red circle is moving along, and as it starts to shimmer, and then all of a sudden this figure just like materializes. It goes from completely opaque to completely there, and then climbs up on the tank. And it's like, you know, the invisible troops. Like, you know, they've got invisible suits and this, that and the other. So maybe they have got invisible suits, you know. That, what a cool piece of technology that would be.
Sounds like a Predator to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the idea was inspired in Predator.
Definitely. I've seen this kind of stuff you're on about. They're kind of like raincoats, aren't they? And they like, it's not quite like completely see through. You can, but you wouldn't see him in amongst, like if he was sitting in a bunch of rocks or something. You'd never see the guy.
This really does is like as he's moving. You know, the target is moving obviously, and you see him almost go like from like sort of shimmering movement to a slight opacity to sort of fully opaque, and then climbing up on the tank, and it's almost as though he just goes like switches this thing and goes when he materializes. Wow. And it's there on the internet. If you search for, I don't know, invisible troop in Afghanistan or something, you'll find it, like, you know, this little thing. I suspect it's probably been gimped or something, you know, photoshopped.
I don't know. I've seen prototype versions of where they've been using stuff like this. They didn't quite cover the body and they don't sound quite as fancy as the kind of stuff you're talking about. But I know they've made things like this, like actual working versions. They're not quite like Harry Potter and his magic raincoat, but they're pretty good. They're pretty good. You can kind of see like you can kind of see the edges, but again, you wouldn't see that amongst like a blown out building or something like that, especially if you're not looking for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, camouflage again is also dependent on the eyes to resolve things, isn't it? Like they use the camouflage for blending stuff, and provided there isn't any movement or something that the brain can detect, it just turns into a mash. The brain doesn't resolve it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's a lot of that going on. But some, you know, the technology's there. And as I said earlier on, you know, this, I saw this robotic four-legged mule that's carrying like almost like a troop deployment thing, like a horse, really. but it can move over all sorts of terrain. And they did this show on one experiment, walking under its own control. It's got like a couple of Cisco routers on its back, and it comes wandering along, and they send it on this path, and all of a sudden it walks onto ice, and its legs start skidding all over the place, and you can see this thing making all of these corrections, and it's obviously not being controlled by somebody with a controller. It's obviously the onboard software technology is allowing it to, it's constantly going, moving the legs around to try to compensate, and sure enough it skates all over this ice and then finds solid ground and then gets off it again, and it doesn't fall over. And I thought to myself, crikey, the programming in that is incredible, like, you know, that it can cope with that terrain. So now, of course, they don't show you those things going to war, but I bet you they got them. I bet it's just like RoboCop.
Yeah.
Put your weapons down. You have 5 seconds to comply. Okay, my weapons are down. You have 4 seconds to comply. Oh, shit, Johnny, what are we going to do? That's what, oh, yeah, run, baby.
That is what packet lag does in such a situation. Yeah. Yeah. Stand down. Oh, there we go.
You know what happened there? You'll be, you've got five seconds to comply.
Max headroom. Oh, awesome. So, the question is, I suppose, is that, is well, technical technology for war, but at the end of the day, this show really is a serious business, in the sense of that it does look like that there's going to be some kind of conflict out there in the Middle East, and it looks like it's escalating in a major way. What do the listeners think? The people that listen to the show, get in touch with us. Do you think that John's right, and that you can't motivate the people through the social networks to stop such a thing happening? Or maybe you think that it can be stopped, or maybe you have some other view on what we've talked about. So email us show@random.org and let us know what your thoughts are.
Even if you think we're just completely full of crap with this whole war thing, that'd be even better, actually. So then we could tell you you're wrong and tell you why.
Fantastic. Well, I think that pretty much gets off everything that I had on my little checklist of points to raise. See how organised I am.
Fantastic. Well, okay. Well, I've been Rick Timmis. It's been great talking about this. It's been a great show. So it's goodbye from me.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me, reminding you all to give peace a chance.